Welcome to Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass, and on today's show, we will talk about the thrilling victory over the Atlanta Hawks yesterday, the Nets' continuous free throw woes, and what should Caris LeVert's role be going forward, all that and more, coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We're here. It's happening. Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass. I'm a lifelong fan of the Brooklyn Nets, and on our quest to provide you with bite-sized, Nets-centric, probably kind of impact-filled, information-centric content on the Brooklyn Nets, it's my boy, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on, man?
Josh, it's all about the bite-sized content these days. The people, they like it short and sweet, and that's what we try to give them, I guess.
No one wants a meal. They just want a bite-sized content. They just want a snack.
It's all about fuelings, you know? You get your five fuelings a day. It's not about three meals anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Soon, I feel like soon it's going to be 10 meals a day.
Right, just like all like one bite per meal.
One bite. Everyone knows the rules.
Correct.
Marcus, the Nets played a pretty exciting game last night. You and I had the pleasure of watching it together from the Gavin Shaw man cave, which was great, actually. We were playing pool. We were chilling. We were lamping, as they say in Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I was pretty comfortable the whole way with the Nets game, but it got super close at the end. I was extremely nervous. I had to walk to the other side of the room and watch on a different TV from you guys because between all the free throws and then I had to call my dad at some point to vent, last night was a nail-biter, but I'm happy the Nets got it done on the road.
Yeah, it was definitely an important win, but it was a real, like, slog at the end there, where I think the Hawks went up by four a couple times, and Brooklyn eventually managed to, like, get over the hump and retake the lead and hold on to it. But it was definitely stressful, and it felt like, I don't know about you, but it felt like on that Vince Carter shot at the end, it felt like a little poetic if he had hit that. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because he's hit that as a net before, and especially, like, his range is unlimited even now. So especially as he was winding up, I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no, this can't be happening. But luckily, Vince did us a favor, and then he missed.
Yeah, once a net, always a net. So.
Exactly, exactly. Someone should have told, I guess what other Nets are, former Nets are on their team right now? Tyler Zeller.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't do much. He had a corner three that he missed. But yeah, some former Hawks did damage for the Nets. Kenny Atkinson, great coaching. Great job getting the guys ready to play. And then I thought Damari had a nice game as well with 13 points. But really the stars for me in this one, two guys stand out. First of all, Rhodey Kurucz, who had a Joe Harris-like, as you mentioned to me last night, game. 16 points on seven shots, 4 of 5 from three, and then had that huge dunk on Alex Len. And I love seeing Rhodey back in the lineup consistently. I'm happy it was just a blip on the radar where he was sitting out, and I think he adds a really nice element and explosiveness to this team. And then also Spencer Dinwiddie, had 23 points, 7 of 14 from the field, 6 rebounds and 7 assists. He had a nice game. He was getting a little bit wild towards the end and missed some free throws, only going 5 of 8. But overall, he was clearly the Nets' best all-around player that last night.
Yeah, he had a really good game. He started off scoring the ball really well from the beginning, and then down the stretch, he sort of was looking to pass a little bit more. Like, he found Jared Allen for a couple and-ones late. That really helped when Atlanta had the lead. But yeah, he played a really complete game. Rhodey, I thought, was really good. I would have liked to have seen him get a little more minutes. Obviously, he had some foul trouble, but I thought he played really well also. Like you mentioned, very Joe Harris-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough because I think even though Rhodey does play very well last night, I think Damari is just clearly the more consistent player and someone that Kenny trusts more just because he has that familiarity with him going back to his days in Atlanta. And Damari's been a vet in this league for 8-9 years now. So he's always going to get the nod, and it's not, you can't really play Damari and Rhodey together really, because you just don't have enough creation.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Like, I don't know if either of them necessarily, in addition to the creation you said, I don't know if either of them could guard threes like full time. I don't know if they're like,
I feel like Rhodey's
probably
enough.
Not quite quick. Yeah, I was going to say Damari's probably not quite quick enough. Rhodey, I don't know if he is like strong. I don't know, not strong enough, but like, I don't know, something about him. He's like a little too tall.
Am I making that up? Yeah, maybe he's just like a little awkward almost on defense. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he can guard threes.
Yeah, I guess. I just feel like I guess fours now are kind of threes anyway. So, yeah.
I know the positions change every time. I'm so confused in the NBA now. But yeah, what do you think of, Because for me, I'm looking at the box score now, and Jarrett Allen finished with 20 points and 12 rebounds, but I was railing on him the whole game to you because he should have had at least 35 points. Because, one, he missed a few free throws, which is it is what it is. He's not going to be able to shoot 70, 75% from the line every game. But he only had 6 shot attempts because he kept getting fouled, and these were plays where he should have converted at least 3 or 4 of them to and-ones. It's just tough to watch because he just goes up so – he gets pushed around and doesn't go up as strong as he should. And for me, it's like the plays that should be getting converted to and-ones are he misses those, and then the plays where he should finish with no foul, he can't finish it. So I was frustrated with his game, even though he does finish with some pretty numbers.
Yeah, it was like honestly probably his best statistical game in a long time. But at the same time, like you mentioned, it could have been a lot more. 16 free throw attempts is wild. I mean, it felt like every time he'd catch the pass, like it was like a lob that he couldn't quite dunk, so he'd catch it and come down, then get like slapped on the wrist and miss the layup pretty much every time. Until the like last 3 minutes where I think he had 2 and-ones.
Yeah, he was good in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, he turned it around. He heard you. He heard you call Barry and say, this guy can't make a layup.
It's not that he can't make a layup. I don't know. Just like he needs to just finish stronger. He tries to do layups instead of dunking the ball a lot of times. I know that's a common complaint with big man, but I do feel he's not soft, but I do feel like he needs to just go up stronger. And maybe that's just getting in the weight room because even he's not like you look at other guys like Clint Capella and Mitchell Robinson, and those guys are broad. Jarrett Allen's more like lithe and skinny. So even if he does put on muscle, he just might not have the frame to absorb that contact on a regular basis.
It's also partially that he like brings the ball down a lot when he catches it. Like he could just like catch it high and keep it high, but a lot of the time he brings it down, and like the smaller guys like Kevin Herter, I think, got him once or twice where they just like slap him on the wrist, and then he's like, because he's not strong, he's not able to finish it. Like if he were either stronger or if he just kept it up high, I think that would help.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times there's timing issues between, I'm not sure if it's a Jarrett Allen problem or a Nets guard problem where it should be an alley-oop, and then the timing's slightly off, so he has to catch it, come down, and then try to go up.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure whose fault that is, but it definitely has happened a few times.
Happens a lot, yeah. Marcus, on the Hawks' perspective, I think John Collins is actually, I was telling you last night, I think he's on track to be a Hall of Famer because every time I watch him play, he's dominant. He's the best second jumper I've ever seen in my life.
He's really good. He had 20 rebounds in this game and 33 points. That's insane.
Yeah, and every time he misses, he still gets the offensive rebound.
Yeah, 7 offensive rebounds, which I know we just like ragged him on him a little bit, but Jarrett Allen also had 7 offensive rebounds in this game. He did a good job of like getting extra possessions. But Collins was really good. I mean, he was doing exactly what you, I think, wanted Jarrett Allen to do, which was he was finishing more often than he was just like getting fouled and going to the line. He had 13 of 20 from the field, and I think almost all of them probably were in the paint. So he was like just controlling the inside. It was interesting that I guess he's not quite tall enough, but they start him like alongside Len, which I don't know. I feel like he's probably better used like as a 5 at this point.
Yeah, I feel like optimally they will use him like that, but if you're Lloyd Pierce, who's probably the most anonymous coach in the NBA, you're probably saying, okay, listen, we're out of the playoffs already. We don't want John Collins to take even more of a beating. We'll just start the Lenwich right next to him and have him absorb that contact. And at times we'll go to John Collins. But also, remember, the Nets got a huge break that net killer Dwayne Dedmon wasn't playing.
That's true. He was sitting on the bench. I think he might even be out again tonight. The Hawks have another game. So dodged a bullet there for sure.
Yes, they did dodge a huge bullet. And what do you think about the end of this game? Because D'Lo hits that big three, but then the Nets continuously missed a
foul like before the inbound.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jarrett Allen got fouled before the inbounds, where I thought he would have to take the free throw. Why is it allowed that anyone can take it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess maybe because it's like one of those like – not it's like a defensive three seconds maybe, I guess, so you can just kind of pick anyone. I don't know.
Interesting. But he misses the free throw, and the Nets get the ball. He kind of has a possession where he's taking it himself, misses a layup. The Nets get the ball back again. Spencer Dinwiddie tries to go quickly, misses a reverse layup, which I think was a good shot. He was just a little bit out of control on it. And then even later in the game, Joe Harris misses 1 of 2 free throws. The Nets should have put this away, and they gave Atlanta every chance to steal this game. So the Nets got really lucky.
Yeah, they also got a break when John Collins was like faked out on the jump ball by one of my favorite referees, John Goble. Shouts to him for the assist on the Nets win.
Yeah, I love the John Collins, John Goble fight, because Collins was saying, like, you literally just pump faked me. And he was so mad. He wasn't mad at himself or mad at Jared Allen. He was just like, you tricked me.
Did you watch the replay, by the way? It wasn't really like a pump fake. I didn't think it was that like egregious from the ref.
I watched it live and then haven't since. So maybe I'll check it out. But he was really, John Collins is really mad.
No, yeah, he was very, and he kept like making like a pump fake motion to the ref. So I think he was pretty upset. Also upset was Spencer Dinwiddie, who like, I thought he was going to get a tech when it was, I think the Nets were up by one. Dinwiddie like missed that layup, I think like you mentioned. And it looked like Trae Young maybe like swiped him on the arm a little bit, and Dinwiddie was just screaming at the ref. And I was like, please stop. This is a 1-point game with like a minute left. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I want to talk about this more, because Dinwiddie, I feel like, is just gets completely incensed. And I feel like even the tirades he's going on now have surpassed what he was doing last year, when he was like really got his rep for being just a guy that goes after the referees. So we'll take a quick break here on Locked On Nets, and then coming back, we'll talk about the Nets' free throw woes and also continue to talk about Spencer Dinwiddie's tirade against the NBA referee contingent. Back here on Locked On Nets, Marcus, before we threw to break, we were talking about Spencer Dinwiddie's really just going off on the referees. I'm shocked he did not get a technical last night, because it would have been really deserved. He was just like cursing them out, furious, hand motions all around. He needs to get a hold of himself. Like, I get it, and there was a foul in that play. Trae Young did get him on the arm, but you can't do that, especially in such a close game when this means so much to the Nets, given that they're right in the thick of the playoff race. They're desperate for that number six seed to beat off Detroit. It's just, you can't do that. You need to be able to control yourself, and he got lucky.
Yeah, and I was actually especially surprised, because we saw the refs give a tech to Jared Allen earlier in the game when he kind of like shoved Torian Prince on the foul when Allen was setting the pick. So I thought maybe they were going to have like a quick whistle and just kind of tee him up right away. So props to them, I guess, for adjusting to like the game situation and being like, this is a 1-point game. We don't want to decide the game ourselves. But Dinwiddie definitely needs to chill. I think you made the point when he first came back from his hand injury that you said, I know he's back and fully healthy because he's complaining right away. So he was in midseason form from that perspective. Definitely needs to tone it down, though.
Yeah, it's just like, honestly, good for him that he's not getting attacked on this, because I feel like he's gotten so much more respect since when he really broke out last year. But yeah, the Nets just need a coach, either someone that can help him meditate or just someone designed specifically to hold him back, because he was going at it and then everyone just seemed to let him do it. I'm like, come on here. And I love Spencer Dinwiddie. He's my favorite player on the team by far. I'm a huge Dinwiddie homer, but that was just ridiculous. And I don't know, especially for someone like him that goes to the basket a lot and relies on getting foul calls. I mean, he averages 5 free throws a game. He needs the refs to be his best friend. You know, he needs to be like a Rondé, D'Lo, Caris LeVert type friendship with them. Just like really get into it and buddy-buddy with them. And it's not, you know, you're not going to make friends by screaming at people.
Yeah, also, like, I know that they missed, like, that one call probably, but the Nets shot 54 free throws in this game. Like, they got plenty of calls throughout the game. Not that, like, they shouldn't have shot that many, but they did. So, like, I don't know. They got a lot throughout the game.
Yep, absolutely. The Nets did get a lot of free throws. The problem is that they couldn't make any of them. They were 33 of 54. They were like, okay, we did it. We got to the line. No, you actually have to make the shot. And it's surprising to me, because the Nets are a pretty good free throw shooting team, you'd think, on paper. And the struggle over these last few weeks has been surprising to me. Besides Ed Davis, who was 1 of 6 last night and just completely off on them. So besides Ed Davis, who was 1 of 6 and really is the only guy on this team who's like a abjectly terrible free throw shooter, you'd think the Nets should be good at the line. But I don't know if it's weird to me that it's like either everyone shoots well or everyone shoots poorly with free throws, even though they shouldn't be correlated whatsoever. But you can't miss 21 free throws on a road game. The Nets got super lucky to pull this one out.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also weird because, like, no one, I guess besides Ed Davis, shot, like, extremely terribly. It was just that everyone missed a couple, like, up and down the line. Like, Joe Harris missed 2, Russell missed 2, Crabb missed 2, Carroll missed 1, Dinwiddie missed 3. But, like, none of that's, like, crazy, like, if it's just one guy who did that. But it was just, I guess, a coincidence that everyone happened to do it on the same night.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets are 23rd in free throw percentage at 75%, which for me sounds pretty good, but wow, the Lakers are at 69%. Nice. But,
nice.
Them and Miami are the two worst free throw shooting teams in the league. So I feel like generally teams have gotten better shooting free throws over the years, but especially when you get in these close games, coming up down the stretch, the Nets do have a tough schedule. And if they are lucky enough to get in the playoffs, they're going to face these teams like in Indiana, Philly, Boston, outside chance, and or Toronto or Milwaukee. And to play these teams, if they want to have a chance, you have to make your free throws. I mean, if the Nets shoot like this again against a team that's actually good quality, not Atlanta, they have just no shot of winning because they can't just leave free points on the table.
Yeah, and they've got that big road trip coming up. I think it's 7 games, and they're playing like all either playoff teams or the Lakers, who have LeBron James. So they definitely need to hit free throws because not every team's the Hawks, like you said.
So. Yeah, not every team is lucky enough to have John Collins.
And Trae Young, triple-double.
Triple-double Trae. When are the Nets playing the Lakers? Because I'm thinking now that hopefully LeBron just might rest. Or if it's on a back-to-back for the Lakers, then he's definitely out.
They play them March 22nd.
Okay, someone, quick, our intern, get us who the Lakers are playing on March 21st.
If you're able to stall, I can pull it up in a second.
Yeah. Marcus, you're not our intern anymore. I told you. We've elevated you to co-host.
I know. I'm on the pod now. The people can hear my voice. They can hear it whenever I choose to speak, I guess. They can't hear it when I don't choose to speak.
You're not just behind the scenes guy. When is that? Stall.
La la la.
Okay, no.
I'm not editing this out, by the way. I'm leaving.
They have 3 days. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Okay, so it's not a back-to-back because they play Milwaukee on Tuesday and then the Nets on Friday. So, yeah, LeBron's probably going to play in that, which sucks, but also no Brandon Ingram, no Lonzo Ball. They're both out for the year. So hopefully that game looks gradually easier and easier for the Nets. And, I mean, it's still going to be a tough game, but if they can get that win, that would be nice. But
yeah, honestly, I mean, they should win that game. Like, they're a better
team. You think?
Flat out, yeah. The Lakers are like five or six games under 500, and they're like tanking now. Like, that's a game. I know it's on the road, but that's a game that the Nets should win.
I don't say they should win, but they're going all the way out west. That's the thing. It's like they're playing these tough teams, and also they have this really long West Coast road trip where it's like OKC, which is central, whatever. Then they're going out to Utah, Clippers, Sacramento, Lakers, and Portland. How annoying is that? They have to play the Clippers, then go north to play Sacramento, and then come back down south to play the Lakers.
Yeah, but at the same time, they'll have been in California for like almost a week at that point, and they have 3 days off between that Kings game and the Lakers game, so they should be rested and they should be adjusted to the time change by then, I would think. So I think they should definitely win that game.
I don't know. I was in LA recently visiting our friend California Matt, and
he's
back
in New York though.
Yeah, I don't want to work. I want to just chill by the beach, hang out. You know, when I'm in California for that long, I don't want to be playing basketball, even if it's my job to do so. So I feel like I don't want them to get into be like, oh, we're on Venice Beach hanging out. You know, we're in Santa Monica. You know, I don't know.
That's when Jared Dudley and Damari Carroll need to step up and say, listen, guys, we've got 2 days off after this game. You can party Saturday night with no repercussions. And So let's work tonight.
True. The Nets are going to be at the bungalow that Saturday night. If you want to see them, go there. I bet. And D'Angelo Russell will show them the hot spots.
That's a good point, actually. Revenge game.
Yeah. Revenge game, exactly, for D'Lo. And yeah, maybe the Nets will win that one. Hopefully. Okay, we'll take another break. That segment got off the rails. And coming up, we'll talk a little bit about Caris LeVert's role going forward and the big game the Nets have against Detroit on Monday coming up. Last segment here on Locked On Nets. Marcus, we didn't talk about Caris LeVert very much, but he was really bad last night, and I'm starting to get worried about him. He was 1 of 6 from the field, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 turnovers in 21 minutes, and he really just didn't make any impact besides a negative one.
Yeah, he had a pretty bad game. But at the same time, like looking at the box score, he had the highest plus-minus on the team.
Get out of here with that. Get out of here.
But yeah, he's run like extremely hot and cold since he's come back. Like, he's had good games, and there's definitely been flashes. Like that second quarter a few games ago that he had was really nice. I think it's just a situation where Kenny kind of has to play him, obviously, at the beginning and then kind of gauge if he has it that game or not. And if he doesn't, I think riding Dinwiddie more, riding Crabbe if he's shooting well, which he didn't do in this game. You can ride those other guys, and that's have enough players where you can kind of hide LeVert if he's not playing well. But if he is playing well, I see no reason to like keep him out of the lineup.
Yeah, but if he's playing well, then absolutely, like, ride him 30 minutes a game. But for me, I'm a little bit concerned because his first 2 years in the league, he showed a ton of flash, and I'm very high on his long-term potential, but he was inconsistent, and he comes in this year and has a really great 14 games to start and looks like someone who has taken a leap and obviously has that devastating injury, and I know he's going to take a while to get back into the swing of things, but it's still a 14-game sample size that we were tantalized by. So who knows? Maybe the real Caris LeVert is somewhere in the middle, and he's not someone that's taken a leap from his first 2 years in the league where he's can be a solid contributor, a role player, but he's not someone that you can rely on like you can rely on D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie. So for me, I don't want to see any lineup where he's out there by himself. He has to be someone that can complement Dinwiddie or Russell, but they're, for me, clearly the two lead guys on the team because LeVert, his shot is just so inconsistent. He's struggling finishing. His mid-range game has always been a bit hit or miss. So it's hard to rely on him to create consistent quality offense.
No, definitely. I mean, he's shooting like less than 30% from three since he's come back. It's been, I think, 12 games now that he's been back for. So definitely like enough of a time where it's like starting to get a little concerning. But like I said, he has had good games. He played well against Charlotte. He played well against the Bulls, even though he's on a minute restriction in that first game. So I think, I don't think you're saying this, but I don't think cutting him out of the rotation entirely is the answer. I think you're in favor more of like cutting his minutes, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I mean, he played 20 minutes against Atlanta. He played 20 minutes against Cleveland also. I think that's about right. I mean, he does. I think Joe Harris is a lot more valuable to the Nets right now. And Alan Crabb, when he's hitting shots, and he sucked last night, was 2-11 from the field. But he's been playing well enough where it's like, okay, Crabb, even though LeVert's a better player and more talented, Crabb's ability to space the floor, he has an element that LeVert just can't do. And I mean, okay, well, I'm looking at Crabb's stats now. He's sucked the last five games. But before when he came back, he was red hot. And he's still shooting 37% from three for the season, which is valuable. People run out on him, respect his shot. So I don't know. I feel like LeVert, he adds a nice element on defense, and he can get out and transition. I just feel like he's struggling to score now. And then as defenses get tighter and the Nets play really good teams coming up, and especially in the playoffs, LeVert's just going to be a complete liability unless he was really able to step it up.
Yeah, I think the point is just that the Nets like have options now, and they have guys who they can put in who are capable. Mm-hmm. Like I think Dinwiddie and Russell probably are like locks. Like these guys should be playing even if they're not hitting shots. Like they should be out there because they're good enough. They've proven that they can turn it around mid game. I think LeVert is probably not at that level, is what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And for me, like I'm curious to see what you think because D'Lo played 31 minutes last night. Dinwiddie played 30. Especially as these games coming up really get to must-win status for the Nets, like how high do you think Kenny will go in terms of pushing their minutes? Because I don't think he's ever going to go to 36, 38, but I could see 33 or 34 for each of those two guys.
Yeah, and obviously they have like that long road trip coming up, but for the most part, they've got days between the games. Like there's the back-to-back of at Utah and at the Clippers, but other than that, like they've got a day off, 2 days off, 2 days off, 2 days off, a day off. So it's like the games are going to be tough and they're going to be challenging and they're on the road, obviously, but they have time in between where guys can relax and kind of recoup. So, I mean, if it were me, I would be playing those guys like 34, 35 minutes, but it doesn't seem like the Nets necessarily want to do that. Maybe if they lose a couple and like the pressure gets put on them, maybe then we'll see the minutes ramped up. But I think if they're able to like steal a game or two early on the trip, maybe not.
Yeah, no, because it makes sense because when you look at this Nets team, besides Damari Carroll and Ed Davis, everyone's pretty young. Damari's definitely a guy with his injury past, and he's struggled when he plays a lot of minutes. He can break down. So you want to keep his minutes no more than kind of like 25, 28, even though he is hugely valuable, because you're going to need him in the playoffs if you get that far, because he's by far the most versatile four on this Nets team. And you have him, you have Rhodey, and then Travion Graham has huge flaws. Rondé obviously is unplayable for me. JD has a ton of flaws as well. So Damari, you need to keep him fresh and consistent. He's played a huge part on this Nets team this year. But besides that, everyone else should be ready to go 33, 34 minutes if needed with no problem.
Yeah, and a lot of these, or not a lot, but some of these guys like Crabb, LeVert, and Dinwiddie all missed a ton of time. Like obviously it's because they were injured, but they should have like fresh legs theoretically, like stamina-wise. So We'll see.
Well, Dinwiddie just hurt his thumb, so he should be ready to go. I had no excuses. He just got it like free 5 weeks, basically. Yeah. Crab at least
bruised. He bruised his fat pad, so you never want to bruise that.
That's the one thing. If I have any injury, I take it over a bruised fat pad. It just sounds painful.
I don't even know what it is, but I don't like.
No
it.
One knows. No one knows. Marcus, the Nets have a big game tomorrow against the Pistons. Obviously, the battle for the sixth seed is well underway. The Pistons are currently playing in Chicago right now. It was a noon tip. It's 27-27 right now. I'm vigorously rooting for Archie Diacono and the gang to pull off a win over Detroit. But they've been playing really well lately. They figured things out. Wayne Ellington has been a nice addition for them just to add some consistency on the wing. Luke Kennard's been playing well. And obviously Drummond's starting to pick it up. So what are the implications for the game tomorrow? And what do you think is going to happen? And do the Nets have a good shot at this one?
Well, the implications are huge because, I mean, I guess we'll wait and see how this Bulls-Pistons game goes. But regardless, whoever wins tomorrow will be in the sixth seed for now. It's in Brooklyn, so I think the Nets definitely have a shot. To get a little number thrown at you here, ESPN's Basketball Power Index gives the Nets a 58.6% chance of winning the game against Detroit tomorrow. Obviously, if the Nets win, that's really huge because it'll give them four in a row and it'll put them like on it'll give them some momentum going into that long road trip. It'll be their 36th win if they're able to get it, and I think we've talked about where like 38-40 is that number where we feel like it'll take to get into the playoffs, like even as like an 8 seed or something. So if they're able to get this one, that's big, because then you just need a couple more, maybe that Lakers game and maybe like another game or two where either you play really well or teams are resting guys. So I think this is a really pivotal game.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one because the Nets haven't played Detroit since October. They played them twice in the first 2 weeks of the season. The first was the opening game where it was a good performance. LeVert had a great game where he scored 27 points, but Blake hit some tough shots late and gave the Pistons the win. And then the second game was the one where Spencer Dinwiddie hit the game winner over Drummond. So two close games between these teams so far. On paper, the Nets don't match up great just because you have two bruisers inside in Blake Griffin and Drummond, who can really give the Nets problems. Because think about it, the Nets are going to have to, I guess, play Rhodey and Damari Carroll to guard Blake. I think maybe I could see that Kenny even breaking out Jared Dudley just because his smarts and toughness give him a shot to match up better than the other two. But they're really going to struggle being able to stop him consistently, and he could get a lot of the Nets' wings and forwards in foul trouble.
Yeah, I think the Nets definitely need to try to get Drummond in the pick and roll and just kind of like attack him with Russell and Dinwiddie like the whole game. Also, I forgot that this is like they're only playing three times. This is the last time, so this will determine the tiebreaker as well.
Yeah, and Dinwiddie always shows up against his former team. He loves playing the Bulls and the Pistons, so expect him to have a big night like he did in the first two meetings against these teams. And I don't know. I think I could see him or D'Lo, because D'Lo didn't have a good game against Atlanta. He hit that big three, but definitely struggled with his shot, going 6 of 23. So I could easily see him getting back on track, having a night where he just drops 28 or 30 and carries the Nets to a victory over a team in the Pistons that has that top-end talent, but their bench is a bit questionable. So look for the Nets to expose them there and be able to get out to a nice run in the early second, early fourth, when Dinwiddie's able to play against backups.
Yeah, definitely. And looking forward to it. Excited to pod with you after about it, Josh.
Yeah, yeah. This is a big game. Honestly,
it's a big pod for us, too.
It's a big pod, yeah. We'll talk about when we're going to do it, but look for it in your ears. Probably sometime on Tuesday, hopefully, if we can.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're not arguing against that, so we'll get it done. That will do it for Locked On Nets. Please rate and review our podcast. Subscribe if you can, if you're able to. We'd much appreciate it. Follow Marcus on Twitter at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. Follow the account at Locked On Nets. And when you're in your car, please say, smart device, play Locked On Nets or any of our brothers and sisters on the Locked On Podcast Network. And for Marcus and myself, that'll do it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.